I'm Gab, he's Jewel. Blue Skies over West London. What a show, because it's the other derby weekend.
Oh, yeah.
The North London derby,
yep.
The Madrid derby, yep. Plenty going on. How about Bayer Leverkusen top in Germany? Lecce third in Serie A, although we won't be talking about them. Something called Brest, which, as you know, I assume was a body part. Top of Ligue 1.
That's right.
But I think we have to start at the Madrid derby, because I'm not going to pass judgment which derby's bigger, blah, blah, blah.
No.
But Real Madrid getting their backsides handed to them,
yeah,
by Atletico a week after that humiliation against Valencia. I think that's newsworthy.
Yeah, I agree with you. And at least we had a winner in this derby, not like in the other derby. And also because Atleti had only won one of the last 14 Madrid derbies, and they won this one in style. I don't think there's any debate or argument on who was the better team. It was theirs, and they took the chances really well, and they scored early in the first half, early in the second half, which is obviously a big help, we often say, even if it sounds like a cliche. And Real Madrid were off it completely. Carlo made mistakes in his starting lineup. And on the other hand, Atleti and El Cholo, on the back of that game against Lazio in the Champions League, where they were really good, but in the end only got a point, I think continued like that in a big contrast to what we saw against Valencia.
Yeah, and as you said, I thought the turnaround, if you only watch La Liga and you don't watch the Champions League, or you just look at results, you know, you would have looked at the Lazio game and said, oh, what is this? No. Atleti were phenomenal,
yeah,
in that game. I thought that midfield, Saúl, Llorente, Koke, absolutely just ripped Real Madrid's bigger name midfield, mm-hmm, and bigger name and more people midfield,
yeah,
as well. And let's get to that, because, you know, we have to criticize.
We love him,
when he stinks up the joint.
Yeah.
That lineup, maybe the one striker system works when you have a striker that's not Rodrigo.
That's a problem.
But this way, whatever position Bellingham was supposed to play, it just didn't work.
No, I mean, Carlo loves a Christmas tree formation. We know that. But in this case, with the five midfielders and only Rodrigo up front, so wherever you look at Modric, Bellingham, Valverde, Camavinga and Cruz, first time that Cruz and Modric start together, and it's a disaster. And okay, you face the most physical and aggressive, especially at the Metropolitano team. So it's not easy. But there's a reason why before he didn't start them two together, and there's a reason why Modric came off at halftime, because it just I don't think it can work anymore. But for me, maybe the worst of it all, I can maybe try to understand what he tried to do, to not have Tchouaméni in this game, where he's even more physical and aggressive than the Camavinga is, who's still more of a finesse kind of technical player than Tchouaméni. Not to have Tchouaméni there in a game like this, I thought was completely, completely mad.
It looked to me, especially, I mean, I 100% agree with you. I was going to mention the Tchouaméni choice. I felt that he kind of envisioned a game where Real Madrid would have a ton of possession, pass the ball in circles, Atleti would sit and try to do the Atleti thing. Real Madrid's quality was going to give them a goal.
Yep.
And then you're kind of set up for the counter, and then you send on Tchouaméni later, and you win 1-0, right? I think in his mind... plus, of course, the Bellingham goal in injury time.
Because of that course. Yeah.
And it completely didn't pan out that way. Atleti taking the game to them really from the start.
Yeah, yeah.
Real Madrid struggling to keep the ball. Would Hacelo have made a difference? Is the other obvious question I think you have to ask here. Because you can play a Christmas tree, but then, hey, how about we get more proactive? I have Hacelo at the top.
Yeah, play
and long. Rodrigo and Bellingham, you know, behind, running from behind,
yeah,
one half each, Modric cross, Pish Pesh
yeah,
cross.
Yeah, maybe. And the fact that he came on at halftime shows that, you know, there was clearly Carlo felt the need for him. I just think as well, when you concede solely, and by the way, we've said it, I think, on Thursday after the Champions League, it's another game where Real Madrid go behind. And we said maybe it was on Monday after the weekend against Real Sociedad, where we said there will be a day where you can't come back anymore, because you're not just 1-0 down, you'll be 2-0 down. And that's what happened after 18 minutes. And if you start like that, and I know we say all the time, and it's a bit of a cliche, but when you have a game plan, and after 4 minutes or whatever it was, Morata's first goal, that goes out of the window. And then the game has changed already. The way you've planned your game and analyzed your game before, it's gone after 4 minutes.
Yeah, and you have to adjust. I think we're going to get into Atletico Madrid more because I think they deserve a lot of praise. El Cholo Simeone deserves a lot of praise. A lot of individuals stood out for me. Shout out to Samuel Lino, by the way.
Yeah.
At this stage of the season, Real Madrid have scored 11 goals in La Liga. And they were perfect, let's not forget.
Yeah, 5-5. Right? Before, yeah.
Last season, at this stage of the season, they had scored 20 goals. The year before that, they had scored 22 goals.
I know, but it depends on who you face as well. If you face Gijón, Almeria, and I don't know who.
It can't just be, though, Vinicius and Benzema not being there anymore. I haven't looked at schedule strength through six rounds this year compared to last year or the year before that. Obviously, they've played Atleti, but who else have they played?
Yeah, Getafe, Celta Vigo, Real Sociedad.
Celta Vigo, who are close to relegation.
Yeah.
Celta also down there.
Getafe is maybe the most defensive team that they face.
You know, it's not. I guess what I'm saying is there is a difference.
And to your point, just before you go again, it's not even just the goal, because if they had expected goals of 25, for example, and scored 11, we would have, okay, but it's not even the case.
No, and it's also, to be fair, and you know this because this is how Carletto thinks, he's not somebody who, you know, if they did have a game, and in some of those they might have had games where like they were 3-0 up at halftime, the other team is a guy sent off, and they run up the score, right? You know, so those numbers on its own.
But it's clear.
It's obvious that this is different.
Yeah.
It's obvious that, to me at least, that while Rodrigo's a very talented footballer, when the ball goes up for him, he's really going to struggle to hold it up, allow the team to come forward and lay it off.
Yeah.
Too many times he gets it and...
I mean, imagine him against the three like God that were centre-backs for Atletico last night.
Exactly. But this is where maybe you would expect more from Jude Bellingham, but then you have to remind yourself, this guy's 20 years old and he's never played this position, right? He's never played this kind of
that's the other thing.
Second striker position. He's very smart, but he's still a kid.
Yeah.
You know.
And but maybe in that formation, this is also the flow of that the flow of that formation, in the sense that if you play him there, so even more higher up the pitch than in the diamond midfield, because diamond midfield he's got two ahead of him in Joselu and Rodrigo, Vinicius and whoever. In this one, but again, that's completely against his own nature. I was on the FC show on Sunday night, and Sid Lowe was. They were finishing the analysis of the game with Sid at the ground, and Sid was saying, like, trying to defend Bellingham as, you know, as he does, he really likes him. So yeah, you know, Bellingham was not good, but he was always asking for the ball. And if you watch the game again, he is coming short a lot of the time in an area and in a space where you already had. In the first half, for example, a Modric or a Camavinga or Valverde was there. And that's surely not what he was asked for. But because he wants to help and because he's now this big player that they really rely on, he feels like, okay, I should be here, but instead I need to be closer to whoever has the ball to go and ask for it. And that, I think that was completely counterproductive for Madrid, and also far too easy to defend for Atletico because everything was in front of them. Okay, Bellingham is going deeper. Well, he can go as deep as he wants. He's no danger to us over there.
No. Joselu, I thought, was going to change the game, but then they concede again. And then at that point, it's going to be very, very difficult. Yeah. I did wonder, we know Ancelotti's not somebody who's going to go and have, I think, a knee-jerk reaction to this, right? They play Las Palmas in midweek. I think his attitude is, all right, we've got enough quality. We'll get the 3 points. We'll calm things down.
Yeah.
And we're going to figure it out when Vinicius returns. Because
he's training again, by the way. Yeah.
He's training again. He's got one more game and then the break. Hopefully he doesn't get injured on the break. And that's a very Ancelotti approach. I almost feel like we haven't seen sort of proper Real Madrid this year, because proper Real Madrid includes Vinicius. And Vinicius isn't there.
Like just the first couple of games, maybe? But yeah.
So, but what I do wonder, though, is still, in terms of numbers, the up front, they're short. Because if I'm Real Madrid, I would love, if I'm Ancelotti, I would love to have one more winger forward type. right? Notwithstanding, right? You should have four. You should have four going into the season.
Well, a proper number nine more than a winger.
Okay, but you have a proper number nine in Joselu.
Yeah, whether, a better one.
Okay, fine. But whether it's another number nine, whether it's somebody who can play central or wide, right? Just another body that can mix into the rotation, because as well, Rodrigo's going to play a ton of minutes. And then the other thing is, I'm sorry, the Militao, Courtois. All right, Courtois, you can't do anything about. You brought in Kepa. Kepa's not the problem, but Kepa's also zero value added, right? Kepa does not make you better. He's a guy.
Yeah. I don't think he wins your game
on
his own.
And the way Courtois did.
Yeah.
But the Militao one really, really weighs heavily. That is a lot of strain on a lot of people who are in their 30s. I know Frelamundi's fit again. Maybe he can take some minutes at center back, possibly, because you know what? If you play him at left back, he's a center back playing at left back. Who, you know, when he tries to attack and tries to trap the ball, it goes 10 meters up the pitch. So you might as well put him. Right? It's my view on Frelamendi, right?
Well, he's not center. He's never played center back in his life, I think.
But that's what he is. He's a center back who's playing left back. It's a weird French thing.
He's never been a center back.
No. But what I'm not.
He's a left back by trades. He's always played left back.
But he's not an attacking.
Oh, yeah, no. But
what I'm saying is, I feel better with him playing center back.
Really?
Than playing Nacho. Then overusing Nacho, then why?
I would not trust him. He never played there. Why would you want him to play there now?
How hard can it be?
look at Alaba. No, Alaba is a much better player than Frelamendi will ever be. And even he can struggle at times as centre-back.
I don't know. I think he's played there a couple times, a couple last week. But the point is, in the modern game, he's not a left-back for Real Madrid.
But certainly they're short a centre-back, for sure.
And it's another body who can go there, right?
Yeah.
You want to play Tchouaméni at centre-back? Sure. Play him. Although I'd like to have him in midfield, as we were saying earlier.
Yeah.
Talking about Atleti, obviously, I like to think Simeone tore them a new one after the Valencia game.
Sure.
And they showed it. And in the build-up to this. What I really liked is the way that they got they really took advantage of the width with San Molino.
Yeah.
And on the other flank, Marcos Llorente was disciplined in the runs that he made. And they looked like the more grown-up team. Before we even get into Morata and his goals, which is fine. You know, with Morata, you can't count on those. Is this a blueprint? I know we've said this a million times.
No, it's not. I just think that if you looked at the Real Madrid starting 11, and we knew who would start really, certainly at the back, because they are short. So
right.
Lucas Vazquez, a right back, who is not right back, we know that. And Fran Garcia, left back, who is young, who has potential, but I don't think really, to be honest, he's ready for a game like this of his calibre, especially when Atleti plays that well. So if you were to say, hang on a minute, who's the best crosser of the ball I have right now? Right foot, left foot, what side should we exploit to cross the ball well for Morata, who on his day is one of the best headers of the ball? This is where he's actually better with his head and with his feet to finish. And the three goals come from that left-hand side from Atleti, the right-hand side from Lucas Vazquez, Real Madrid. One by Lino, two by Saul Niguez. If you're El Cholo, what do you say to Morata? So it's Rudiger on right centre-back, Alaba left centre-back, right? And then Fran Garcia, tiny Fran Garcia, small Fran Garcia, behind Alaba. If you're Morata, where do you go between Fran Garcia and Alaba every day?
Yeah.
If you go between Rudiger and... Because the cross is going to... You know the cross is going to come from that, from your left-hand side, right? If you go between Rudiger and Alaba, this is tough. If you go between Alaba and Fran Garcia, there will be a lot of space. Fran Garcia will have to maybe push on and mark Morata, and Morata is what? 20 centimeters taller? And Alaba... Really, Alaba, as we said, is still more of a left back than a centre back, and sometimes has those moments where he doesn't really.
He's more of an attacking midfielder than a centre back, to be honest.
What did Griezmann do on his goal? Same movement, same thing. The ball comes from the same side, and again between Alaba and Fran Garcia, that was the space that you had to attack for your headers, and Atleti did that perfect. So you can try again in the next game, but the left back and the left centre back might be taller, stronger, better in the air than Alaba and Fran Garcia. I don't know. But I thought that was spot on. And when you do it after 4 minutes and it works, then you know it's going to work again, because Real Madrid never really addressed it.
No, and you still have the runners for midfield. So it's not just you're just exporting the crosses. And I thought that's
yeah, so like Saúl well. To get in that position.
Saúl exactly. from that position, yeah, yeah. Griezmann dropping and then going again.
Griezmann was amazing. And I think, again, we say a lot, but when Griezmann is that good, Atleti are also that good.
All right, so here's the uncomfortable question. Is this a legit three-way title race? Or do we always think that Atleti are going to Atleti at some point?
Let's not forget they've got a game in hand. You know that game that was rained out when it never rained. So if they win that, it's 13 points, which is obviously two behind Real Madrid, three behind Barcelona. So I think if they don't do again the Valencia performance where I really don't know what happened. They overslept. They went partying the night before. I mean, I don't know where the energy was or anything. If there's no more of those kind of glitches, then of course, 100%. The way we saw them against Lazio, the way we saw them at this weekend against Real Madrid, they should be up there with the other two.
All right. Final word, going back to Real Madrid. Rio Ancelotti is going to go with the zen-like calm. He's going to remind people that they have played, if memory serves, you know, they've won every other game they've played this season, right?
Yeah, 5 out of 5 before this.
And they've beat Union Berlin.
Yeah.
To which you say, yes, but how many of those games came with late goals? And in how many of those games did you actually play well?
So late goals, I think maybe 3 out of 6 or 4 out of 6.
Yeah.
And play well. I think they played well against Union. They hit the woodwork 3 times. They could have won 4 or 5. But yeah, no, it's still a bit underwhelming.
I don't think well against Real Sociedad, but...
Second half, yeah.
Then again, you're without your best forward, you're without your best defender, and you're without... Your best player,
yeah.
in Courtois. So I think there's a lot on there. I think it's going to be really interesting to see, kind of institutionally, how Florentino handles this, because obviously there is that lame duck element to Carletto with his contract expiring and likely going to Brazil. There's the Mbappe situation in the background. Put it this way: if I'm Florentino's spin doctor, I'm going to have a very, very busy few months, regardless whether the results improve or not. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Madrid derby. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
It finishes 2-2 in a rip-roaring North London derby, Jules. Am I wrong to suggest that Ange Postecoglou will be the happier of the two managers, given it ultimately came down to Jorginho's brain fart?
You're not wrong at all, of course. I think it would feel a bit like a win for Spurs, even if I saw some of their players after the game and they were like, you know what? We were still a bit disappointed in the dressing room because we felt we could have gotten won this. And for Arsenal, it feels like a defeat, let's be honest here, because in the end, Spurs played great, and I think we have to applaud the bravery that they have to go to the Emirates, play like that, to have their fullbacks really high inside. All of that was great, the Ange board, great. But in the end, the Gabriel Jesus miss is a huge mistake. The Raya on the first goal is a big mistake as well, not to palm the ball away in a corner instead of keeping in play. And obviously the Jorginho's mistake. So in the end, that game turns for Spurs in the three big mistakes from Arsenal's point of view.
And I'm going to put on my little Spursy hat and say, okay, fine. But then equally, you want to talk big mistakes? How about Kuti's own goal, right? Where the ball can go anywhere?
Yeah,
how about the penalty? Where it was a penalty, no argument there, but whatever. And how about we'll get to it later? How about Nketiah's assault on Vicario?
Yeah.
So, you know, in the end, if you break down the episodes, I think a draw is probably a fair result.
A fair result.
Because Spurs are away, you know.
Oh, it's a better result for them. That's what I'm saying. No, and they've played great. I'm just saying that the game could have turned very differently on those three, like Arsenal incident. And you say yourself, it came down to the Jorginho brain fart. So
at the end for the 2-2, yeah.
Yeah, but so even after that goal at 2-2 with half an hour to go, I thought, oh, great. The end is going to be amazing. And I think Arsenal were tired. It was a bit flat in the second half from their point of view. And I think in a way, Spurs maybe were happy with the draw. The fact that Son and Maddison came off after 78 minutes, I was a bit surprised, I won't lie. Because I thought there was maybe something more to go. But maybe if you end...
Even Richarlison's late heroics, of course.
I mean, he was really useless when he came on. But maybe if you end, you think, you know what? 2-2 is a really good result.
It is a really good result.
Yeah,
and so, it continues building confidence.
Yeah. Because for Mikel Arteta in that game, Gav as well. So Raya ahead of Ramsdale and Fabio Vieira ahead of Kai Havertz.
So it's three straight games of David Raya ahead of Ramsdale, right? No. So, like, honestly, like... If you sign Raya because you think he's... I'm going to give Mikel Arteta five games. If Raya plays...
For what?
No. Two more games. If we had two more starts from David Raya...
Ramsdale is going to play against Brentford in the League Cup.
No, forget the League Cup. It doesn't matter.
No, but I'll tell you already. I don't know why you're wondering. Okay, Raya is going to play the next two league games and Champions League.
Then if that happens, then don't go and make up these stories about, well, based on the opponent, why alternate, blah, blah, blah. What? Based on Brentford, Ramsdale's more suited, but then Raya happens to be suited to start five games in a row. Just say, like, they were competing. I like Raya better. Raya's my number one. That's all I'm going to say on that. On the Fabio Vieira for Havertz thing, maybe it's just me. I don't see it. I know Havertz has all the failings in the world, and he's German, he isn't scoring off, and this and that. But come on.
Yeah, I thought
This is Fabio Vieira. Maybe he's a long-term project. Maybe he likes the little weird facial hair that he has. I don't know. But in a game like this where you know it's going to be more physical, where obviously he couldn't have known that Declan Rice was going to get injured, which, by the way, is another thing in Arsenal. Otherwise, because Jorginho's not on the pitch if Declan Rice is injured. But I think you got to play Havertz. I think you have to give this Havertz experiment a chance to succeed.
And the fact that he brought him on at halftime shows that it's a mistake that you correct at halftime.
Oh, one more thing on Jorginho. Look, massive brain fart, his fault.
The guy never dribbles. Why does he dribble there?
Fair enough. What I don't want to hear is people saying, oh, he's too old to handle the pace and physicality of the Premier League. That mistake has nothing to do with pace, nothing to do with physicality.
Nothing.
It has everything to do with making a stupid decision. Yeah. Okay, so let's just stop it with the stupid stereotypes.
Yeah.
That Eddie Nketiah tackle on Guglielmo Vicario, Jules, how is that not a red card?
I don't know. I wondered on being at the game. I wondered there, to be fair.
When you see it again, it gets worse and worse, and you realize that if Vicario doesn't happen to have a guardian angel that lifted his foot off the ground,
supple ankle, clearly.
Well, yeah,
a very supple ankle.
He must be double jointed.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's not in a hospital bed right now.
Is it because the studs are not showing? So if you look at the Malo Gusto red card, for example, that was a yellow given first. It's clearly the studs on Ding's ankle.
Yeah.
In this case, it's not the studs don't touch anything. It takes him off, takes him out with him, with his legs. But but Vicario's leg is stuck between.
Jules, if I go and I can go and do a scissors tackle on you and break your leg, and you'll never see my studs. Just the stud showing could aggravate something.
Yeah.
And look, there's no question. Nketiah wasn't trying to hurt him. Nketiah was just, in my opinion, I don't think he's a dirty player. He's just completely irresponsible, did something really dangerous, and that's why it should have been a red card. Simple as. And maybe it has to do with the fact that he's like, oh my God, I'm only starting because this Muppet, Gabriel Jesus, can't finish at all. And why don't we have any strikers?
He's starting because Trossard and Martinelli are.
Yeah.
Bayern puts seven goals past Bochum, Gab, as Harry Kane scores a hat-trick and gives two assists. Too easy, right?
You know what? I think Bayern were angry. I think this is just like massive frustration, conceding three goals against Manchester United at home, the Leverkusen game. I thought they went out there and it was just like, we're going to go and pound Bochum to a pulp. I thought Bochum
were terrible, by the way.
Bochum were terrible. Kane looked really good. We saw the best of Alphonso Davies again. If we see real Fonzie, that's a real value added. Yeah. So happy for De Ligt's goal. Sad that he's injured again.
And Matistel again.
Matistel
again.
A bit special. Jules, a lot of derbies, even more quick hits.
Yes.
Manchester City stay perfect in the Premier League. But Jules, Pep is angry at Rodri's red card 45 seconds into the second half.
Yeah.
I'd imagine you would be too. Yeah. And how big a blow is his suspension? He'll miss the Arsenal game.
It's massive. I mean, if you remember Casemiro last season against Palace was a similar kind of thing where maybe the photo looks worse than the whole video. This is a lot more stupid because they are completely in control. There's no need to do that from Rodri. I don't know why he's so angry. I think it's very disappointing from somebody who's one of the best in the world to do that, to let your team down like that. Even if City are flying, it's Calvin Phillips who replaces him. Kovacic is still injured. I mean, this is a completely different story now.
I want some Rico Lewis in there. By the way, speaking of stupid things, this is kind of glossed over because nobody, I think, just got booked. But the Ederson business with the Aboni, the striker. Dude, I'm like, what are you doing?
Again.
You've seen your teammate get sent off and now you go and do this?
I know.
Completely
unnecessary. It was so tense. Why would you be so tense?
It's so stupid. It's just so uncharacteristic, and Pep is right to
be
angry.
Barcelona come back with 3 goals in the last 8 minutes against Rafa Benitez. Celta Vigo to win 3-2. Xavi called this epic, Gabi, but should he be more concerned about how they played for the first 80 minutes?
Yeah, and he is more concerned. I mean, he said it himself. In the first half,
they were terrible.
Absolutely terrible. Celta Vigo could have scored 3 goals.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
In that first half.
Yeah.
Rafa Benitez had the whole thing, except I think things changed a little bit when De Jong went off and he brought in Gavi as kind of like a deeper playmaker type thing.
De Jong injured.
And Celta Vigo's, I actually would say, this, even though Celta Vigo made a 2-0, that goal was on the counter, tremendous pass from Iago Aspas. When you attack, you are going to concede on the counter. I had less an issue with that. But the problem for me is what happened in that first half. It was the wrong mindset, wrong spirit. At the end, the Jao shows, you know, Cancelo, Jao Felix.
I still don't know if I prefer the pass from Gavi or the finish from Cancelo.
It's the pass from Gavi. It's as much as I love Cancelo.
No.
Oh, and also the one for the João Félix pass.
Yeah,
for the little dink for Lewandowski. That was a bit special too.
But I'm not sure Iago Aspas comes off like Rafa Benitez did. I think after that, Celta just lacked a bit of something that maybe he would have provided just to keep the ball, just to have that leadership.
Pick on Rafa.
It's true. I think he messed up there.
Let's talk about Rafa's old club, Liverpool, beating West Ham 3-1. They're second in the table. Jules, you want to talk about good Darwin Nunez or bad Darwin Nunez?
Always good Darwin Nunez, but I mean, I'm not going to say anything
that miss
different. The miss is harder to miss than the goal that is. I mean, I just don't understand how he can score the most difficult chance and then miss the easiest one, like he did many times before, and like he keeps doing. So I want to really see him succeed. I'm a big fan, and I think eventually he should get there. But maybe his brain just like, I don't know, something happens where he knows it's difficult. It's like the two finishes against Newcastle. And then even in Europe in midweek, he missed like a sitter, and I'm like, what?
Let me make this simple for you. I'm a big fan because he gives you energy and he gives you work rate. I just don't think he's anywhere near what they paid for him. And the goal is a good one. Yeah, but the ball could have gone anywhere. I think he's useful to the team because you have enough quality players around him. It helps to have a big man who runs around, puts himself about. But I think that's where he is right now. And if you get goals from him on top of that, it's gravy. But for me, if you were to do a hierarchy of Liverpool forwards, it's not just Salah who's ahead of him. It's Luis Diaz who's way ahead of him.
Yeah, but he's
and
the
it's Diogo
man.
Jota who's ahead of him.
Well,
I know.
Not for club.
Well, for me.
Juventus 4-2 Sassuolo 4-2 this weekend as Vojec Chesney puts on a horror show. But Gab, it's not just about him, is it? That was pretty bad.
This was probably the worst goalkeeping performance of his career and one of the worst you're ever going to see. 3 craven mistakes on the 4 Sassuolo goals. It's not just about him. The midfield was terrible. They were played off the pitch by Sassuolo. They somehow got it back to 2-2. And look, at 2-2, you say, yeah, let's go and win the game. Yeah, but also, let's not go and concede stupid goals like this. The fourth one is almost comical with Chesney passing the ball to Gatti.
I don't know what happened. Like
Chesney took it near the corner flag, and then he doesn't come back into his goal, and Gatti passes it.
Yeah, no, I know, but I don't know what happened. What can happen in your mind when you're a player
I don't know. I don't know. Paris Saint-Germain beat up Marseille 4-0 in the Classique. But Kylian Mbappe goes off injured.
It's okay. It's just a knock on his ankle. He was fouled and got a free kick. That free kick, Hakimi scored it with a quite wonderful shot with his right foot. And after that, it was just all PSG. Even if Marseille had one chance, and Vitinha should have done better on his header that just tipped the top of the bar. But I thought, and Luis Enrique said after the game, this was almost total domination, which it was from PSG. They were really outstanding. And Marseille are not in the right place. They're not in a good place on the pitch, off the pitch as well. So there are circumstances, but still, that was very impressive from Paris. Really.
Little Vitinha better than big Vitinha, yes?
I mean, you don't have to think Vitinha about it. Little Vitinha didn't play. Yes.
No, yeah, in absolute terms.
Yeah.
Yes, okay, thank you.
Yeah, I guess so. Inter is the top of Serie A with a 1-0 win over Empoli, bottom Empoli. But Gab, how about that Fede Di Marco goal?
Top three left-sided wing-backs in Europe. He absolutely belts it. And look, it was a wonder goal, fine, but Inter dominated the rest of the way.
Four, five.
They could have scored many more. Bruno Fernandes' goal gives Manchester United a 1-0 win over Burnley. And my boy, Luca Colaiocco, the pride of Norwalk, Connecticut.
Woo!
Jules, I never thought I'd say that Johnny Evans set it up, but he did. It's true.
And what a great ball it was, Gab, with his left foot as well, perfectly.
Better finish, but
But still.
Nobody on him, but yeah.
But inch perfect for Bruno, who scores that great, great volley. It was not amazing from a United point of view. They were really under pressure in the first half before that goal. But I think the most important right now, considering where they were, is just to win, regardless of how you win.
It is. And, you know, part of me said, look, I thought in the first half, Burnley could have scored several goals.
Yeah.
Burnley totally had the upper hand. They hit the post. Andoni missed the other easy chance. Equally, I go through this team, and with all due respect, it's Reguilon, who everybody thinks is terrible.
Yeah.
It's freaking Johnny Evans, who's 35 and probably shouldn't be there. It's Hannibal Mansbury, who I think a lot of people would have thought had retired at a young age.
Yeah. McTominay.
Scott freaking McTominay, are you kidding me? Like, a lot of mitigating circumstances for Ten Hag.
It's another defeat for Chelsea, Gab, who have Malo Gusto sent off in the second half and lose 1-0 to Aston Villa at the Bridge. Pochettino says they need to grow up.
Yeah, they need to grow up and they need to make better decisions. And I'll give you exhibit A in this one, which is Nico Jackson. Bear in mind, he is the only center forward at the club, yeah? So it's kind of important that he be available, right? He somehow has managed to pick up 5 bookings in 6 games this season, which is objectively really difficult to do. It means he's now going to be suspended for the Fulham game.
Yeah.
He gets bookings for knocking the ball away, I think it was this weekend, for stupid stuff. And this just drives me crazy. If you're Pochettino, it must drive Pochettino crazy too.
I think so.
Like, dude, you're the one guy I need.
No, but Nico was never a prolific goal scorer, and yet he was signed to be a goal to score goals, which is not what he can do.
Yeah, well, that.
Do you think he will finish the season with more yellow cards and red cards and goals? Be honest.
That's mean, but no. I think so, because I think in January Chelsea will probably have a different center forward. It's either going to be Broja if he's fit, or it's going to be Nkunku who's going to be the main goal scorer if he comes back, or they're going to sign somebody. But
yeah, I think they're going to sign somebody.
And then he's going to keep getting yellow cards. He's on pace to get 34 yellow cards this season. I mean, honestly, it's crazy. The other thing, Poch, again, the same things. Enzo in the hole.
Yeah,
you're not helping things.
I don't get it.
At the back, you have Chilwell and Mattson. You wanted 2 left backs, right? Why do we have to play Levi Colwill at left back? Levi Colwill should play because he's very good. He should be playing center back.
I know.
Right?
By the way, I think you should prepare yourself mentally, physically, because with Gusto now suspended, Reece James still injured,
yeah.
I would think that your friend Axel Disasi is going to play our right back. And I think you need to prepare yourself see that.
You know, he can play pretend.
He's played there for France, you know. He played there for Monaco before.
If he plays right back like he plays center back, that's fine. Just sit back there and just be an extra body, which Chelsea could probably use if Thiago Silva is starting anyway. Still de facto, that's fine. Go Disasi right back, Colwill and Thiago Silva, and then finally play Mattson or Chilwell down the left, right? Yeah. You're going to send Chilwell on as if he's some kind of flying winger. it's another situation. By the way, like Chelsea already, they're 3 points from relegation, and 9 points from fourth place. Not good. A word on Malagusto, was that the correct decision?
Yeah, I think it was completely. The studs on Ding's ankle is just, I don't know, maybe he's still young.
French guy on French guy.
It's okay, you know, he stays in the family. I don't know, maybe he got carried away a bit. He misjudged it, I think, completely. I don't think he means to hurt him at all, but yeah, that was a bad one.
And are Villa good?
I think they are decent. I don't think they're amazing. I think they will not finish top six. Maybe top eight, a bit, I saw 7 and 8. But I think it's good. They're good to watch. They could be resilient at times. But they could also have been 2-0 down in that game without any question. So
yeah, Chelsea's finishing, leaving a bit to be desired.
Yeah, again.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Bayer Leverkusen thump Heidenheim 4-1 and are joint top of the Bundesliga, yeah. Jules. More love for Xabi Alonso?
I mean, when Heidenheim scored and went 1-1, I was like, ooh, interesting. Yeah. But that just made them angry again, you know. And after that, Boniface scored early in the game. And I think maybe they were just cruising on a kind of forced rhythm. After that, they scored 3, Adli scoring again. I love what Xabi Alonso is doing with Amin Adli. They're good. They're very good. We said that before. And it was never going to be Heidenheim who could like stop them, I think, especially at the Bayer Arena.
No, I think Heidenheim, one of those teams, is really, really overmatched. What I was struck in this game was defensively, I thought Leverkusen conceded very little. I mean, obviously, yeah. other than the goal, because that's always the criticism, right? It's so attacking and, you know, pent up so long time, you know. Yeah. But they've been solid back there.
A Rafael Leao goal gives Milan a 1-0 win over Hellas Verona. Gab, they needed this, right?
Yeah, came in, wrapped it up early. They needed it because people in Italy, we flip out over results, and they're like, oh, you couldn't beat Newcastle at home. And obviously, you got destroyed in the derby. And there's a history of Verona getting upset wins over Milan.
Yeah,
people think that what happened in 1950 is relevant today, and Milan have a lot of injuries and so on. Rafael Leao was criticized recently by Rigo Sacchi, saying he can do more, blah, blah, blah. If you mean he needs to grow or he can grow, sure, he can grow and become really, really good. He's got all the tools. If you mean that he's not pulling his weight, I refer you to the fact that he has 3 goals in 5 Serie A games this season, yeah. All of them from open play. Yes, he was very stupid against Newcastle with a back heel.
Yeah, for sure.
But come on, let's grow up a little, get some perspective.
Completely.
Speaking of Newcastle, yeah. They destroy Sheffield United 8-0 on the road, and they do so with 8 different goal scorers. Jules, this Saudi derby was rather one-sided.
It was, although a 0-0, there was a couple of like good opportunities for Sheffield United, and then they collapsed completely after the first goal. That was really a goal you should not consider at this level.
With the long staff?
Yeah, Gordon on the side and then long staff, and everybody's just ball watching, like it's crazy. Still impressive from Newcastle from set pieces point of view, for example, where they were lethal last season, not so much so far this season, but then went again on Sunday. Back in 1999, I think, they already beat Sheffield Wednesday, 8-0. But this time, Alan Shearer scored 5 to have 8 different goal scorers, Issa coming off the bench scoring, the starter scoring, Almiron coming off the bench scoring, all of that. I think he's really, really good. And after 4 days or whatever it was after the Milan game where they ruined their luck massively and they play under par and they should have been beaten, to come back like this is good. A nice City in the League Cup in midweek. Let's see what they do. Tough times for Napoli and your boy Victor Osimhen, Gab. They held 0-0 at Bologna. He misses a penalty. He hits the woodwork. And then he comes off. He's taken off by Rudy Garcia and gets really angry.
Yeah, so
2 strikers he wanted. 2 strikers.
I don't think Napoli played poorly to that point, but his penalty miss was terrible. It was I think it was close to the Darwin Nunez miss. Actually, yeah. No, the Darwin Nunez was probably worse. But what struck me was he got taken off. Rudy Garcia sent on Gio Simeone. And he was very angry, very publicly. He held up, you're right, the two-striker sign. Yeah. Like, why can't we play with two strikers? Why do we have to play? You know, why does one striker come off? You know, I get his point. You can't do that in public. You can't go and undermine an already under-fire coach in that way. I would hope he regrets it, learns from it, and moves on.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the league leaders in France, Jules. That's right. It's Brest.
Hey!
Not just a body part, but 1-0 victors over Lyon and our friend John Textor, who is now second bottom in the league.
Yeah, Fabio Grosso's debut on the bench, terrible performance, terrible choices. I know you like him. And I liked him at Frosinone, but Pusherki on the bench, Lyon were terrible. And he took a late goal from Brest at home to win. Eric Roy doing an amazing job. Really, this is, I think the last time they were league leaders was maybe 2010. For two weekends, they were top of Ligue 1. Amazing. They just have this very strong collective strength with a lot of unity, a lot of belief. The same players from last season, apart from Martin Saiano, who's on loan from Inter Milan. And that works well. So, amazing. Well done to them. Really, that was a really, really, really good win. Borussia Dortmund bounced back from the Champions League defeat to beat Wolfsburg 1-0. Gab, what did you learn?
I learned nothing because he made six changes, almost all of them in midfield and attack. He kept the back three, which I don't like. Look, they played well, but I just don't know. Are these the guys who are going to play?
Do next week?
What do you do next week? I'm not saying, you know, I'm not against rotation. Rotation is necessary and so on. There's certain positions where you can alternate players. Maybe you can alternate Füllkrug and Sebastian Haller up front.
Yeah, for example, yeah.
But others, you need to decide. This guy's better than that guy. That guy's better than this guy, so that we can build some chemistry. When you make six changes like that.
That's true.
He was courageous to do it, by the way, because Wolfsburg were on a good run. And they played well, but which Borussia is going to show up next week?
And Marco Reus scoring, though. It's always lovely.
Did he? Or was it Daniel Malin? It was kind of weird. It felt like they kind of collided and like one of them knows who scored.
Yeah, exactly.
Jules, we've had a Timo Werner sighting. He comes on for Leipzig, scores his first goal since April, and they beat Borussia Mönchengladbach, and now they're 1 point off the top of the table.
I had completely forgotten about him. Like, I promise you, you know when we prepare for the seasons in all the leagues and we watch the games at the beginning and stuff, he completely passed by me that he was still there.
So you were all like Sesko, Openda, this is the future.
Yeah, Openda, Sesko, Xavi Simons. Oh, you know, you look at them, you look at what Marco Rosso is doing, you see them in the Champions League, and then you watch the game at the weekend, and oh my God, he's coming home, he scored a goal even. It's good for him, I guess, if he can help, I suspect, as an impact sub, because he's not going to start for this team. I would not think so. Good for him. But yeah, I really had forgotten he was there. Sorry, Timo. Sorry. Three goals in three games for Romelu Lukaku as Roma grab a point away to Torino. Gab, Mourinho must be happy. Did you turn this cricket that way on purpose?
What do you mean?
I mean, a point against Torino? Surely that's not enough, right?
You know, he must be happy that Lukaku's scoring and it's down to him. He's not happy that... You know, they felt like they should have had more out of this game. I think they agreed to play the more attacking lineup in this game. It was El Shaarawy plus Lukaku plus Dybala, which, you know, in Mourinho land is mega attacking.
Mega.
You know, fact is, they're still not where they want to be in the table. Torino, though, I think are a tough...
Yeah.
They are a tough out. And look, the guy's been suspended. Let's give Mourinho some time.
Yeah, that's good.
And Lukaku's happy.
His goal on Thursday was really good.
There you go.
Lovely move. Cristante's back heel. He's finished.
And you like his beard too? Now?
Yeah,
like,
I've always loved his look. Always.
Flo Balogun misses not one, but two penalties. I want him to get a third just to see if he could equal Martin Palermo's
of
record.
Of course.
Jeremy Boga. Yeah. Oh, yeah, baby. Scores a buzzer beater. Jeremy Boga, of course, a human highlight reel. And my boy, Francesco Farioli and Nice are kings of the Côte d'Azur, Jules.
Amazing. What a derby it was, to be fair. It was really good on Friday night to start your football weekend. It was great. Poor Flo Balogun, I have to say. Marcin Bulka saving the two pens. Amazing.
And that guy's really good, by the way. He's a very, very good goalkeeper.
Love him there. I think he should have played last season ahead of Schmeichel. But anyway, that's another debate.
That's one for Sir Jim and his team.
Yeah, exactly. But then Boga, who hasn't scored yet since joining Nice, to go into that slalom at the end, little dummy, and then shooting and scoring. Amazing. Nice, back-to-back win against PSG at the Parc des Princes, and then in the derby against Monaco. Amazing.
It's Farioli. It's Farioli.
Amazing.
It's Farioli, right?
Amazing. They're still unbeaten, man.
I know, really good.
And
for where's your Hutter gone, huh?
I was going to say.
Where's your Hutter gone? Yeah.
Adi Hutter, not happy. But again, when you miss two penalties.
It's not on him. Yeah, no.
Yeah, exactly. US Soccer Federation, Mike Crocker says that Greg Berhalter and Joe Reyna have spoken and are in a good place to move forward together. What does that mean? He comes back into the fold?
This would seem to foreshadow that at the next international break in a couple of weeks, maybe Joe Reyna will be called back into the US men's national team.
Yeah.
Now he's
on the back of great performances, obviously, with Dortmund. Yeah.
Yes, he's played as many minutes as you have since last season for Dortmund.
Right. Okay.
I don't think he's played competitive football since the Nations League in June, when they had that interim guy in charge of the national team because they couldn't figure out what to do with Greg. Like, at some point, somebody's got to be the grown up in the room. Gio Reyna has been made an example of.
Yeah.
I think rightly so. I think public opinion, 99.9% of coherent people who look at this will say, in this dispute, there is a right and there's a wrong. And the wrong is on the Reyna side.
Yeah.
Not just Gio, but obviously Gio Egan and whatever, right? But equally, Greg Berhalter's job is to do what's best for the U.S. men's national team. And if he feels it's gone on long enough and it's time to bring him back into the fold, time to give him another chance, he's still a young man, then it's the right thing to do. I'd be more concerned by the fact that he hasn't gone on the pitch at all for Borussia Dortmund.
I know. What's going on there?
Even with the internships.
I know. Yeah.
He was on the bench with his six changes to kick it on. That, I think, is more the concern.
Yeah, I agree.
Ugly scenes at the Amsterdam Arena, Jules. Ajax v Feyenoord is abandoned with Arne Slot's team 3-0 up after home fans fire flares on the pitch to get the game intentionally abandoned.
Yeah, so there's a protocol in the Netherlands for things like that. First, it was a plastic cup that was thrown onto the pitch, so you get a warning. Then the game resumed, there's flares on the pitch, so it's the second warning, and the warning says if that happened the third time, the game is abandoned.
It's like the protocol for discriminatory chants, racism, and so on.
I know you love a protocol, so I thought...
I love this protocol.
I remind people, and like you said, third time, game was abandoned, they were 3-0 down at home. Chaos off the pitch, obviously, we talk about Miss Lintat just after, but Maurice Steen being a terrible manager... the players being all over the place. They're 13th or 14th in the table. And then Feyenoord being very good, as we know, just battering them. And then we saw even uglier scenes even by the ultras trying to get in and some of them managing to get into the stadium towards the offices, the VIP area, the hospitality, all of that. I mean, poor Johan Cruyff probably turning into his grave. It's just, I don't know where this club is going.
Yeah. Just to say about the protocol, since I do love my
protocol.
One of the risks of the protocol is it ultimately empowers fans to get games abandoned, and that applies to the racism protocol. It applies to all of them because it's all the same protocol. That is the risk. Is the price you have to pay here. I've seen this before about people trying to intentionally get games abandoned. I remember it with in a Milan derby, as you know.
Of course, yeah.
I think fans feel really mistreated by the club and by the choices made by the club.
Yeah.
But the question, this is obviously not the way to voice it, but I think there's a serious governance issue at Ajax. And you can't just say, oh, look, it's all hooligans, blah, blah, blah. I think there are very serious issues, and this club needs to take a step back and ask themselves what they're doing. It's not just about the result.
And Marco van Basten after the game, I mean, we know what Marco van Basten is like when he talks publicly, saying like we should stop professional football in the Netherlands. This can't continue. We saw it a lot. Remember last season in the Cup, in the league as well. I think that's probably a bit too far. You can't do it anyway. But they see your stuff. Clearly, they didn't do enough last season after all the incidents because it's happening again. And we're only 5 weeks in the new season. So something has to happen to change it.
Yeah. And I think one of the risks also, because people naturally, oh, dock them points. Okay, yeah, fine. Dock them points. But you can dock Ajax points. That's not going to make angry Ajax fans behave.
Yeah, calmer. Yeah.
You know, they knew this game was going to get... When they were 3-0 down, they got this game abandoned on purpose to make a statement. They knew they were going to lose this game. They got it abandoned. They will presumably get a points penalty, probably play behind closed doors.
Yeah,
you know, they won't get to go and see the game. all these things are going to happen as a result.
Yeah.
So this whole idea of just blaming the clubs, oh, dock them points, fine them. It's stupid people not understanding the problem, not understanding the dynamic. But Van Basten's right. There's a lot of work to be done here.
Sticking with Ajax, I mentioned Sven Mislintat, the sporting director. He was fired on the spot, Gab, after a couple of months, three months maybe in the job?
I don't know. Maybe they found out he was German.
Or maybe that he was not very good at his job.
Or that, you know, he showed up wearing sandals with socks, as he's wont to do.
Or maybe signing players with conflict of interest via an agency that kind of owns shares in Sven Mislintat's own company.
So Sven Mislintat, formerly of Borussia Dortmund, formerly of Arsenal, I thought the absolute worst combination of personalities. It's either going to be brilliant or it's going to be an absolute disaster. Yeah, was when Arsenal paired him and Raul Sanjay. Yeah. They obviously, it was Ivan who brought them together, right?
Yeah,
I think before
so.
I left. It was like, oh, let's get two guys who are completely different and then they'll bounce ideas off each other. No, and look, I think there's a reason why I think Raul Sanjay has pretty much disappeared, right?
That is somewhere in Spain, I think, or so.
And Mislintat's heading the same way. I'm not saying these people are incompetent, but the reason Mislintat was let go wasn't just the signings, is he supposedly went into the dressing room and told the players that Maurice Stein's job was in jeopardy and he was about to get sacked. Yeah. You cannot do that.
He told the keeper, you'll be out of the team, I guarantee you.
It's not your job. You cannot do that. Certainly not when, look, he's always been, I mean, I've never met the guy, but I know plenty of people who have.
Yeah.
He's always been kind of like an eccentric sort of mad professor type, but I know, while also looking like an aging hippie, which is kind of what he looks like, but you can't be doing stuff like that. Not at a club that you've been at for 2 months. Maybe Monchi could do that at Sevilla in his heyday, but not at Ajax.
Definitely.
Marcus Rashford unhurt after he got into an accident in his Rolls Royce on his way back from the training ground following Manchester United's 1-0 win against Burnley. Jules, no big deal. Just a scare, right?
Yeah, I was more worried about the Rolls Royce, to be fair.
It looked like, the pictures looked like it sustained a lot of damage. And those cars are like big tanks, aren't they?
I know. I thought it was solid. And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I'm glad Marcus is okay. And, you know, I assume they are safe cars. But yeah, that is like, it was
the other car
from a Rolls Royce point of view.
I was definitely disappointed. It's funny because there's a pub on the corner just up the street from my house. And every Sunday, there's a guy who drives up in his Rolls Royce and goes inside.
Or it's called Rolls Royce or a new Rolls Royce?
No, that's the thing. It's the new one. It's the ones that they look like tank. It's not a vintage one. It looks like a tank. It's actually the ugly, in my view, right? I prefer the...
It's because you can't afford one.
Even if I could afford one, I wouldn't spend my money on that. But no, but they look kind of like the more armored Bentley. It's like a big tank. And it looked like the car that Rashford has, and I was surprised. That's a lot of damage. I'm glad he's okay.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bild in Germany report that former Germany and Arsenal goalkeeper Jens Lehmann will undergo a psychiatric evaluation to determine, Gab, if he has antisocial personality disorder. Another ex-player potentially dealing with mental health problems.
So this is his lawyer who's come out and said that, you know, he's going to undergo these tests to see if he's suffering from antisocial personality disorder.
And he's always been quite intense, right? I have many times.
I'm not a mental health professional. I don't know if this is a mental illness or if it's just somebody acting like something that rhymes with a stick. And the reason I say this, the stuff that he's done, right?
He's done many things.
And we've heard many stories from his playing days and whatever, right? Trust me, right? You can even, something you can find on the internet. But the two specific charges that he's facing here is, one is he has a Porsche. Obviously, it's a hybrid Porsche, right?
Yeah.
Eco-friendly
Some
while
of
driving
have,
a Porsche.
Yeah.
He's accused, he goes, he parks and he charges at Munich Airport. but then he refuses to pay. It's like 200 euros. He leaves it for several days. And instead, what he does is he tailgates out of there. So when the gate opens,
he follows
somebody out.
I was
not
sure what tailgate means, yeah.
Which, by the way, there's cameras there and everything, right? Who's the dork with the hybrid Porsche, right? How many are there, right? And his license plates. The other thing he's done, which I think is even worse, and by the way, if you do this in some countries where people are allowed to use and bear guns, you're going to get some buckshot in your backside. So he's got a house, I guess, in the suburbs, and his neighbor did some work to it, and he put some sort of beams on the exterior near the roof.
Yeah.
And it's blocking, apparently this beam is blocking layman's view of a lake. And these are what he's accused of. So apparently, this is in 2022, he went with a chainsaw and he sewed the beam off this guy's house. Now, I don't understand, like, again, if he has a mental health condition, he needs help.
Yeah.
If he's just doing this because he's a bully, because it's a fine line.
Or angry, yeah.
And like, he's angry, yeah. And he's got serious anger management issues.
Yeah.
I'm just glad nobody gets hurt here. The stuff with the Porsche, to me, that does not scream mental health.
No.
I don't know. I just want him to get help. My old colleague, Bill Edgar in The Times, comes up with these stats every week. He says, no English manager has finished in the top three in the Premier League since Sir Bobby Robson in 2002-03.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised because we've been covering football in this country all this time. But I don't think I've ever asked you. Do you have any clever theories for that?
Yeah, I've got a really clever one. English managers are just not good enough. So simple as that.
But how, as a group, it's a big country, it's 60 million people, right? They produce good footballers, why can't they produce good managers?
Because maybe the budget that you do with that federation is just not very developed, I don't know, compared to Coverciano, compared to Clairefontaine, not that the French are much better right now, compared to Portugal, where it's slightly different sort of teaching in universities more than in this kind of federation environment. I don't know, but there's a point. If it's for 5 years, Gabby, I understand. But over 20 years, I think it's a long time enough for us to have a good idea. It's not just a small sample of like, oh, for 3 years, there was just no English managers in the top 10 teams in the country, for example. For 20 years, English managers have been absent, apart from Eddie Howe, really.
Right.
So there clearly is a problem somewhere. And I would think that it's at the root more than anything else.
What's remarkable, too, is how few have gone abroad. He also notes this in the article. I think there's only been three who've coached in big five European leagues. So Gary Neville at Valencia did not go well.
Nope.
Tony Adams at Granada went even worse.
Yeah.
Somebody else I'm forgetting in a big five league. I don't know.
It may come back to us. Yeah.
It may come back to us. And even when people have gone elsewhere, kind of the next tier down, you know, Steve McLaren had success at Twente. Steven Gerrard had success at Rangers.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a short list, I guess, is the point. And
it is.
By the way, Bobby Robson, obviously one of the legends, he was really, really old.
Oh, Roy Hodgson.
20 years ago. Sorry?
Roy Hodgson would count, right, as the English managers to go abroad.
In the last 20 years?
He did well. No, in the last 20 years, no?
Maybe he did. Yeah, but even before that.
Yeah, even before that.
But
yeah,
Roy Hodgson, who, by the way, did not go through the system.
Exactly.
And who's also really old.
Exactly. The Women's Nationals League serves as the qualifying tournament for the Olympic Games, Gabby. So is it weird to you that England and Scotland are drawn in the same group, so we'll face each other to qualify for the Olympics as part of this Nation League system? But yet, they will be the same team at the Olympics. So what happened if England and Scotland both qualify, but it would still be Great Britain's team, right?
They won't both qualify because it's the Nations League, right? So it's just the winner that goes through. But I think the point is more...
It's so strange.
What if England need the points?
Yeah.
And they're like to get into the final four or whatever, so they have a shot at qualifying. So Team GB has a shot at qualifying for the Olympics, and they go to Scotland and say, guys, you got nothing to play for.
Yeah.
Help us out.
And half of your team can come into the GB team.
This is flagged up by a listener, by the way, a guy in Australia, who emailed me about this. I had no idea.
No, me neither. And I thought two per group were qualifying as well, so you're out of it.
It's pretty bad. It's a really bad situation. And it's something that in the men's game would have never happened.
How can UEFA don't do, like, I don't know, special draw with the, you know, the boards where those two can't be drawn in the same group, because it doesn't make any sense.
This goes back to a much broader point, which is, if it's all one country, why do they all have separate football associations? And by the way, and this is, I'm digressing here. This isn't just the four home nations. This is the U.S. with the U.S. Virgin Islands and whatever else. I mean, people don't care about that because the other teams are terrible, but it should be very simple. One country, one team. You know, otherwise, we'll start playing silly buggers. Why don't Spain send a Basque team and a Catalan team as well? You know,
We have a Corsican team, so we can play Corsica.
Well, there's a special competition for
Monaco, Ave, Aine,
it's the one for nations that are not recognized by FIFA, whatever. Hey, that's fine. You go and do that. But at some point, you're going to get these situations. And again, I find it shocking that nobody has highlighted this. If it was in the incredible men's game, there'd be an inquest and heads would roll.
Definitely.
Megan Rapinoe has played her final game for the U.S. women's national team, a 2-0 victory in a friendly over South Africa. Jules, your thoughts?
Yeah, she boasts 203 caps for the U.S., I think 63 goals. She's 38. We saw at the World Cup.
Far behind Cristiano, by the way.
Far behind even Sinclair. I mean, she was never that kind of player anyway, but we saw at the World Cup, and especially with the penalty miss in the shootout, when they got knocked out, that it was clearly the end. I think, you know, not just the edge, but what she could give. Even in that game against South Africa, she played less than an hour. I think she's been great at times for the US. On the pitch, off the pitch, she had a lot of things to say, of course. And some people didn't like that. I think she took some very important positions too. So she will surely be missed, I think, in the kind of character that I think the game, women and men, doesn't matter, need for football and soccer.
I agree with you. I think it's obviously a phenomenal player, probably not up there with the very top level of U.S. women's.
No.
You know, if you're docking Mia Hamm or going back in time, Michelle Akers, whatever, maybe even Alex Morgan.
Yeah, maybe Morgan, yeah.
Obviously, her dimension to break out of the women's football world into a broader dimension, going back to, you know, she used to kneel down during the anthem years ago before anybody else other than Colin Kaepernick.
She did
it out of solidarity with Kaepernick. And then obviously she took other political stances. I do wonder now, she's had a lot of things to say. I think because she was an everyday professional athlete, she kind of dipped in, dipped out. If she wants to, and it's up to her what she wants to do.
Yeah.
If she wants to be a voice and affect more positive change in the women's game, and it takes work and effort, there are avenues for her to do that, whether it's on a union level, whether it's a job with an institution,
with the federation,
whether it's simply, you know, a certain type of informed advocacy. If she wants to, now she has the time to do that. But she doesn't have to. She's done enough.
To see what she does, EA Sports FC, the game formerly known as FIFA, video games, of course, launched last week. Gab, we're still waiting for the FIFA version, no? Though not a split.
It's. I assume they hired a bunch of coding nerds and put them down.
It's
in the
not happening, I tell you that.
Well, but it's weird, right? Because FIFA had this deal where it was one of their most profitable deals, where they just licensed the name FIFA. And first of all, it got FIFA, the organization, a lot of positive press, because a lot of people don't follow football. We're like, oh, look, FIFA's awesome.
Especially with the younger generation as well.
They say that, you know, they wanted more money, and that's why this fell down. It doesn't look like EA Sports. I think September 29th, I saw it on the side of a bus, I think, is actually the official.
Yeah, you can pre-order it. I think you might be able to already.
I'll see what FIFA come up with. Now, the risk for FIFA is that if EA Sports just doesn't miss a beat, then how much is the actual name FIFA worth, right? Because you have to find a developer to make a better game and the value added of the FIFA. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Nah, I don't think it works.
Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Thursday.
Of course.
Because we have midweek La Liga. We have midweek Serie A.
Yeah.
We have
the League Cup, your favorite competition in the world.
No, the DFB Pokal.
Oh, sorry.
Right?
Also the League Cup.
League Cup, what's that?
Nah.
Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.